Chum dhin dhe dhe jen je wa dha chomba yanda wa dzogbe sangye rikwa dhan chamsu dhenpa dhenwa ra je wa jikdin jibu dhuwe galo jo wa lana ameba lhata minam je tumba sangye chum dhin dhe be je wa shajya dhub chadze lo chadu jazu je o tumba chum dhin dhe dhe jen je wa tha chomba yanda wa dzogbe rikwa dhan chamsu dhenpa dhenwa Jigden jemba jebo duwe galo juwa lana meba lada menam je tumba sanje chum Jawa jaja duba la jaze lo chudo jazu che o tumba chum den den deje Jajumba yanda vam zobe sanje rigba dan jazu denba devara sheba jigden jemba jebo Kalo jurwa lana meba lada menam je dumba sanje jumdende bejawa shaja duba alaja javzo che hoi gumbo che zun jambe yangla chaze lo kange lo dhru timnye ting Nyinda namda rabze ve chini tungun chishin sech Nyiji doga le vama zin ganda zibe chun ramar Domo dunye gize ve dozo kun la puji Yinla chuji yande zo chudara che do nyumo nilong lege cha chu chuzi jing Mari me se to nye nyugu chi nye chunzi reti nam Tene da je sa ju tarzi yundun hunzo ya se to vi ugu Chuda chuni kende talu meze jambi yangla du Omo arabazana di Omo arabazana Omo arabazana Omo arabazana di 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 Kada denju shung lo toba Lo ju bobe na wa tse do su Me do dhamma re ra le je nyen de genpa de Sanje shung lo me de mbe wa ye Drogwe nam da shin che bara sho Namba je naman je chugu kala genze ten ten Chedara zame dujan zema la savje chuje chava avdo se Guru rana mendrana gana ya daya me Toye cho nama la janju bado tane gyazo che Tāgī śrīśī kīvē sūnāmā Ṭhūlā pēncē sāngē ṭhūpārā śho Ṭhūyī chūnāmā lā chāngchū pādhū tāni kārśūcī Tāgī śrīśī kīvē sūnāmā kī Ṭhūlā pēncē sāngē ṭhūpārā śho Chūdā zōjī chōnā lā chāngchū bāgdū tāni jāngsū chī Tāgī chūshī jīvē sūnā Rūpārā shūyī Lādā lāmi mēdāmi āñjī āgōmbōdā jāchīn lāsū chūjī chōlā chāvā chēvā nāma Sāngjī sūmbā rābdū shīshīn tēvē gyūgyūbā Dēdā shīngjī tāmbē chūnī jīnī dīshī shī Namo laye jada loda nuyen jen rupon dada meye jenam dan duwa kunje chanan chen zamba tamze jedu tage chudun du. Good morning. Ah, it's a gloomy weather outside, isn't it? Is it gloomy or not?
Yes, it's gloomy. Very
gloomy. Yes. So any incidents, any insights that you would like to share with us, where you are able to apply your, what do you call, apply what you have learned in the classes?
Well, you know, for many years I was always a very impatient driver.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly when people would cut in front of me and do all sorts of things that made it difficult, I tend to get angry. And for a long time I've worked on this, many years. And I was realizing last night that all this working on this must have done some good, because I was driving and a guy pulled out on slushy road right in front of me. I barely had to slow down, and he was going very, very slowly. And instead of the old anger response, it was more of a, and then just a deep breath. And that was my learned reflective reaction after years and years of getting angry at other drivers for getting in front of me. So it was a reminder to me that if you keep practicing, that eventually the practice can work.
That's true. That's very good. There is a psychology term, now I cannot remember, where our tendency is that when somebody does anything that is not really you appreciate or you like, we normally tend to, blame on the personality. Let's say if somebody cuts in, and they say, oh, what a reckless person, impatient, we all do that. We never think of the circumstances the person may be in. Maybe that person, you know, there is life and death situation where if he is not able to reach a destination within a certain time, maybe somebody is going to die. But we never think that. We never take into account the circumstances. Situation. We always blame on the person, you know, reckless driver, impatient, and then we call all kinds of names. So that's our tendency. So if we are able to pause and they say, oh, maybe, you know, he must be in a hurry. Maybe he has to attend. Maybe he's late for a very important meeting. You see, just that attitudinal shift makes a huge difference. All these accusatory remarks will never happen. Instead, you are willing to allow that person to get in front of you. And what does that do? It actually benefits you. Your peace of mind is not destroyed. Otherwise, if you get into rage, we have so many incidents, road rage. What happens in the end? Police comes, you get locked for no reason. It could have been easily avoided, but because you just give in. So yeah, it's very important. So what happens is when you consistently try to apply, try to practice, then along, I don't know, several years, you may not see immediate result, even though, you know, we really like to indulge in what is called instant gratification. But this kind of practice takes time. But along the years, when you look back, you will think, like you said, must have been these, you know, application, these reminders, constant reminders, you are able to behave in a different way. Let me share one of my experience, and it may come across, you know, as a self-praise. So I apologize for that. When back in monastery, I was a terrible person. You come with all kind of adjectives. What are the adjectives? Truculent. Oh, what else? Yeah, the self-centered, egoistic, arrogant. What? All these adjectives can apply. I can fall under that, and it never really crossed my mind. Only after I started to travel. Then I realized that all that study did not help me, did not change me. And I didn't really have someone whom I can really call as my friend. And then I started to think and try to do something about it. And I always admire my Lama friends. There are Rinpoches who are really suited to be a Rinpoche. When it comes to doing the service for others, treated so important. They prioritize others. So there is this conversation between these two Rinpoche, my friends. So they both are like this, by nature, very kind person. And people take advantage of them. And you know, monastery, if we need to get something, we have to go down to Hubli, which is over an hour's drive. So monastery is kind of remote. The city is somewhere in Hubli, called Hubli. So when they go down to Hubli, other monks will ask this favor. So one time, they were together in the room, and then this other Lama was kind of scolding the other Lama. You know, why are you like this, you know? You keep doing other things. You came here for your own thing, and then you ended up going around doing other people's thing. As he was scolding the other Lama, a call came to him. Oh, how many kilo? Oh, is it 10 kilo? Okay, I'll get for you. So I admire that kind of personality. Really suited to Rinpoche. So I tried to work on it. And then it's been several years. And I invited my friends to Malaysia for a vacation. And then the Lama stayed with me for 1 month. And during that time, that Lama told me, he said that either I didn't know you well back in monastery, or you have changed. So that was such an encouraging remark. That means what I have tried to do has produced some results because the other person could tell. And then the next round, another of my friend came. And they also have the same kind of perception. And we have, since then we have become really good friends. And these are the lamas that I feel that I can really count. So you see, if you change, the others will treat you differently. And then you have friends whom you really rely on. So my point here is, I'm not trying to praise myself. What I'm trying to say is, if you put effort and commit energy and effort and time on doing something, using these, what you have learned, into your life, applying into your life, there is what is called the light at the end of the tunnel. There is, you will see the transformation. People will notice. And don't be surprised, three years later, they'll say, oh, you are a different person, you know. You used to be this, and then now you are no longer that. That's a real accomplishment. Mm. So we should really try. Every day we should try. Yeah, I don't want to nag, kind of in a nagging way to, you know, remind you all the time do that. But sometimes, you know, it is good. Here we have 17, 18, 12, 13, 14 people. But Some may find it useful. My necking, they find it useful. So that's why I am doing it repeatedly. So I apologize those who don't like that. Yeah, so that's why every week we have this sharing session with the hope that, you know, when you hear of other people, how they applied that kind of practice into their daily life, you get an idea. Oh, I see. This is way to apply. And then if you go on applying, and you will also see the result. So that's how we all benefit. So that's why I spend some time before the class to have this sharing session, so that we all can benefit. Yes.
I like your commentary. You know, yesterday I wasn't very patient at times. And then when I get that way, I also, it's just my self-cherishing. You know, I have to stop myself and realize where it's coming from internally to change.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's very good. Yeah. Not all the time we will be successful. There will be times where we feel that, oh, I shouldn't have done that. It happens to me all the time. And just recently, I was having a conversation with someone. And then, yeah, we had a long chat. When I went back, I shouldn't have said this. I didn't have to say this. So this is lack of mindfulness. And that helps, you know. When you realize that you were not mindful, then the next day I was like, okay, today I will be more mindful. That helps. And then, you know, when whatever you say, you have the control. You can rein where you want to go. If you are not mindful, you will say and do things. And then when you go home, I shouldn't have done this. I shouldn't have said this. It's late. But for many people, they don't even realize that. But when you have this kind of realization, that is a very good, already very good, because that will lead to more mindfulness. And then, of course, that will definitely help. Mm. Thank you. Yes.
I've been helped by many, many people, many kind people. And I always try, when I have an opportunity, to pass it on, you know, what I've learned, to, you know, when it's appropriate. And your teaching last week about the band, you know, staying within a band of...
resilient zone.
Yes. What is it called again?
Resilient zone. Resilient zone.
I knew about it myself, because that's how I've been able to hold back having migraines for the last 7-8 years. It was, you know, hit and miss and passing it on to others. And so I was able to do the drawing and everything, and with several people who had anxiety, depression. I was able to explain, you know, how we get triggered and so forth, and then do the meditation. It doesn't take long, that meditation. Of course, I held back the religious, so-called religious part of it for them, because it wouldn't have been what they needed. But also, this week, I was challenged with a medical procedure, and so I used it myself to stay calm. And later on, when the medical personnel said, oh yeah, you were so patient, you did so well, blah, blah, blah. So I explained to her why I wasn't available to chit-chat about my weekend, because I had, in the calmness, I could sense that all the people in the room were they were all focused on my behalf, and they were very kind, and she was trying to distract me, you know, by asking about the weekend. So I told her about this later on afterwards, so I was able to, you know, to pass it on. So it just, you know, so... I was able to use it, you know, right away.
Okay, that's very good, very good. Okay. Anyone? Okay. Thank you for sharing. That's good. So today we are going to talk about Bardo, the intermediate state. Last week we discussed about how we circle, repeatedly circle in this existence. We talked about how 12 links play a role, or how the 12 links are a mechanism to holding us in this samsara. We talked about how the ignorance is the root of all. Because of ignorance, we accumulate or we create karma. And then that karma is restored or stored on our consciousness, what is called repository consciousness. Yeah, we store there. And then towards the end of life, how these three, the craving, actually two, craving and grasping, kind of activates that seed and then brings into a very active and ready to germinate. It converts that seed into that karma, ready to produce result. And then how these developmental stages occurs. That's what we have discussed. We only talked about how we take rebirth. It says conception occurs. But we have not discussed the state between death and the conception. So that period is called Bardo state, or the intermediate state. So when our consciousness leaves, it does not straight away get into another rebirth. There is a state where that being, that consciousness, looks for a birth, for a form, for a life. So that period is called intermediate state. So that's what we are going to discuss. And have you ever wondered, you know, what happens after death or those who died? Have you wondered what happens? Let's see. And do you have all kinds of... Can you tell from this scene? Okay, let's see. Who can tell?
What scene?
What scene is from this?
This is Whoopi Goldberg and a ghost.
Yes. Let's see. Hello. Volume, please.
Sister Olame, grant us the gift of your all-seeing presence. Appear before us now.
Buenos dias.
I'm Oda Mae Brown. I understand you wish to contact your husband.
Si.
I believe he'll be with us today.
Thank you. Thank you.
But you know, Mr. Santiago, there's no telling about that other world. So you've got to be a believer, Mr. Santiago. Are you a believer?
Si. Si. I believe. I believe.
Let us begin. Lucita, Julieta, Josefina, Linda, Maria.
Sisi, his mama. She is Maria.
Yes! Praise God, I knew he was with his mama.
Oh my God.
It's too difficult. It's two of them. I'm not sure I can do that. It's so trying. It's...
Oh, I'd pay more. How much? How much?
$20.
Oh, way to go. Milk her for every penny. Today the spirits are churning.
My husband? Mercy.
Oh yeah, where?
Julio?
Yes. I feel his vibration.
I see him. How is he? How does he look?
Well, he's a handsome man.
Handsome.
Coming towards us. I see him. He's coming. He's there. He's dressed in a black suit.
Black suit?
Could be blue.
What a crock of shit.
Show you? What is who?
At the beginning of the clip.
Okay. So what do you think? Do you subscribe to this kind of thing? Normally people believe that, you know, you can contact, you can connect with their disease. And they go to this kind of a medium. And then, yeah. Of course, this, you can tell, is really a con thing. She's just trying her luck. She tried all the names when they says yes, they are. So let's see whether there is such thing as, you know, when somebody passes away, you know, and just lingers and always waiting there to connect with you. What does Buddhism say about this? Let's see. First, we need to understand the four states of existence. There is something called the birth existence. So that is the moment of conception, when the consciousness enters the ovum. That moment is called the birth existence. That is the conception, the time, the moment of conception. And then death existence is the final moment of death, when our consciousness leaves the body. That is the death existence. And then in between, what is called previous time existence. So that is from the moment of conception to the final moment of death. So at the moment we are in previous time existence. And then we have this one, intermediate existence. So that is from the death to conception. The moment our consciousness leaves our body to the conception, to the moment we get, well, we entered mother's womb. Our consciousness enters the mother's womb. So these are the four states of existence. So we are going to discuss on the fourth one, the intermediate existence, or Tibetan we call it Pardo. So in order to discuss that, first let's see the process. Hello. Can you see? The number one shouldn't be the condition of the conditions of death. Oh yeah. So, according to Lamrim, today we are going to talk about these top subtopics. So we are going to first talk about the conditions of death. What are the conditions that give rise to death? And then we are going to talk about the mind at the time of death, and then where heat gathers when we die, where heat started to diminish from our body, and then how one reaches the intermediate state after death. Once person is pronounced as dead, how does we reach the intermediate state? And then finally, how we then take rebirth from intermediate to conception. What is the process like? So we are going to discuss all this. The first conditions of death, according to Lamrim or according to Buddhism, there are three conditions. The reasons why people die. The first reason is death due to the exhaustion of the lifespan. So that is, if you are to live, let's say, 100 years, and if you die living 100 years, that is really your lifespan actually finished. It is not untimely death. You are supposed to live for 100 years, you live for 100 years. So when that lifespan finishes, or when that lifespan exhausts, then you die. That's one condition where a person dies. Condition in which a person dies. And then second, death due to the exhaustion of merits. Even though our past virtuous karma projected us this life as a human being, but then we run out of our merits to support us. People who die from starvation, people who die from cold when they don't have clothes to cover themselves, when people don't have the basic necessities to sustain their life, that's what is called death due to the exhaustion of merits. All these facilities to sustain us depends on your virtues. If you have cultivated virtuous actions in your past life, then of course all these material necessities, you will have no difficulty obtaining those necessities to sustain your life. But if, remember we talk about the projecting and throwing karma, whereas some dogs live like a king, even though they are thrown by negative karma, but their projecting karma is a virtuous one. That's why they have all that facility. Whereas as a human being, the throwing karma is the virtuous karma, but projecting karma is what is called the negative, non-virtuous karma. That's why we lack resources. So this is when people die due to lack of necessities, basic needs. There are many cases. Over here is not so much, but there are many countries in the world where people die from starvation. People die from, what is that word? Thirst. There is no water to drink. So this kind of death due to the exhaustion, death due to lack of resources, is what is called death due to the exhaustion of merits. And then finally, the death due to failure to avoid unfortunate circumstances. That is what we call untimely death. In Tibetan we call duminchiwa. So your karma actually projected you to live for, let's say, 100 years, but something happened. You try to jump from the, what do you call, from a mountain or rooftop. you engage in all those risky and dangerous activities, then you die. So even though you have the karma to live for this long, because of your action, you are unable to avoid unfortunate circumstances, so you die. So this, put in a simple analogy, is like the seed. The seed has, let's say a seed of, I don't know, mango, whatever it is, it has the potential to produce a big tree. And if you plant it, and if you water, and you know, if it gets the, necessity conditions, it will sprout and finally it will bear fruit. But whereas, if you don't water that plant, that seed, and don't give the sunlight, then it will never, it will die. Even if it started sprouted, but if you don't water and provide the warmth and light, it will die. So this is like due to the exhaustion of merits. And then if a cow passes by and then it just eats that, that's like that due to the failure to avoid unfortunate circumstances. So there are three conditions in which death occurs. Now the most important part. The mind at the time of death. According to Buddhism, there are three states of minds that occurs at the time of death. Some people die with a virtuous thought. Some people die with a non-virtuous mindset, in an anger state, angry state of mind, resentment, a lot of hatred, and then, of course, strong attachment. And then some people die in neutral mind. So this is very important. I think we have already discussed earlier. Depending on the state of mind you had at the time of death, it affects your next rebirth. Let's say if you die with a strong anger, what will happen is definitely you are going to be born in lower realms. Because what happens is we have both virtuous karma and non-virtuous karma. So when you die, when at the time of death, when your mindset, frame of your mind is negative, it kind of activates the negative karma. And then, of course, the result of negative karma is to bring down to the lower realms. So that's how you ended up in lower realms. So that even happens to those practitioners who lived their life all the time in practice. But at the time of death, unfortunately, there was this circumstance where the person gets into a very negative mindset. All that life, despite his practicing virtues all the time, but because of that mindset, negative mindset, it activates, it nourishes the non-virtuous karma, and then it brings you down to the lower realm. On the other hand, if you are able to have a mindset, a positive mindset, or a virtuous frame of mind, then it is kind of guaranteed that you will achieve a good rebirth in this upper, what you call the higher realms. So that makes it, okay, in that case, you know, I can just, what is the word? I will just have a positive mindset at the time of death.
Like resolve. I'll resolve to have that.
I will maneuver my mind.
Right.
I will propel myself to have a positive mind frame so that I can achieve a good rebirth. But that is easier said than done. You may think that, oh yeah, in that case it's so easy, I just have to have that positive mindset. But it doesn't come easily. At the time of death, there's a lot of fear, a lot of confusion. And if you are not used to having this kind of positive mindset, it is not going to happen. What happens at the time of death, whatever you are more habituated to, that kind of comes to the fore. And then other things you don't remember. Let's say if somebody whose livelihood is butchering, who lives as a butcher. Of course, in Tibet, the butcher, you really have to go and kill. So if you live a life killing animals or fishing, if you spend your whole life fishing, at the time of death, that will be so strong. And that will come up, killing and all that. And then because of that, of course, we will later discuss, there's a lot of fear and all that. And then there's anger, resentment. So it is not easy to generate a positive mindset at the time of death if we are not accustomed to doing it while we are alive. So it is so, so important that to have a positive frame of mindset at the time of death. And it is even more important to have this habit while you are alive. Only then we can hope, we can expect, we can anticipate to have a positive mindset. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. And then once you are born down there, it is very hard. I'm trying to remember a verse from Shantideva. Never mind. Basically, it's saying that once you are born in one of the lower realms, then it is very hard to come back. But we can see from our own experience. Of course, we cannot see hell being and hungry ghosts, but we can see animal. Animal, do you see them do any practice? Not at all. You try to teach them money? No. You try to teach something else. They will do all kinds of tricks, but if you try to teach them, even like a short mantra to recite, no, they don't have that capacity. They don't have the ability. Even the smartest dog, even the smartest animal, of course the parrots do learn to say this, but like dogs and all that, no. But you can also see their tendency. When they see a squirrel, what do? The first thing is go after them, is to kill them, is to harm them. Most of them, of course, there are rare incidents. But instinct is to go and kill them. So with that kind of, if you live that kind of life, no way. And then forget about at the time of death having positive mind frame. It is impossible. So that's why while we are alive, we should really, really put effort to always have positive mindset. Then when the time comes, it becomes an automatic thing. It becomes our nature. We don't have to worry. Then we are able to achieve optimum human rebirth in next life. Then through that we can practice, and then there is this what is called the incremental progress in our spiritual journey. And then, who knows, sometime we will reach up there. So this is the opportunity. remember we talked about the optimum human rebirth, precious human rebirth, how fortunate we are to have this. We need to see the value. We need to see that this is so precious. So if you see the value, you will avoid fretting your time away on doing essentless, meaningless things. We will do or engage in something more meaningful. So that's why it is so important at the time of death. And then there are also what is called people go through different experiences, mental experiences, according to what kind of mindset they have. So those who die with a virtuous mind, they have this experience of passing out of thick darkness into light. That is so nice, isn't it? That kind of feeling. You see the light there, brightness there, and then yeah, you are walking, you are already in this darkness, but you are walking out of it. That's a very nice feeling. So it is less likely to have a lot of confusion and fear and anxiety when you see something bright out there rather than something gloomy and darkness. And then those who die, this keep happening. Then those who die with a non-virtuous mind, to them, they undergo an experience of passing from a place of light into thick, impenetrable darkness. You are already in the light and now you are going in there. Who wants to go into that kind of darkness?
And they're in the light and the other ones are in the dark. I don't understand that.
Yeah, it's because of the mindset. So when you, let's say, especially when you are dying with non-virtue, those who are, predominantly engage in non-virtuous actions, what happens at the time of death, there's a lot of fear. And you hear story about people, you know, complaining about kind of nightmare things where, you know, they see something is attacking them. And there are stories where those butcher who kill cows and yaks and all that, at the time of death, they say, oh, these yaks are coming to,
ram into them.
So with that, there's a fear. And then, you know, you go into kind of a anxiety mode. And then when this happens, suddenly you are in darkness. And then, yeah. I mean, you are certainly in this one, and this one, when the consciousness goes in there, already it's like you are walking in the dark. It's like from there, first you are there, but you are already in the darkness.
Right.
It's just that it's kind of a the vision they have. It's, of course, it's not really happening, but they to them, they feel like they are going through that kind of. But this gives them so much fear. Then those who die with neutral mind, then yeah, you don't have this any particular experience. So the question is, what determines whether one dies with virtuous or non-virtuous mind? We have already discussed, it is your habit, the way you live your life. If you live your life most of the time doing virtuous actions, then you can expect to have a virtuous mind at the time of death. Otherwise, it will be just a wishful thinking. Shall we stop here for the break, early break? So now we are going to discuss on where heat gathers. Why is this so important? So these are considered as the indicator, as an indicator where the person is going to be born. If the heat gathers from certain parts of the body, then it indicates which birth the person is likely to be born. So that's why normally people will inspect. So those people who created predominantly non-virtuous karma, so for those people, so when the heat started to, the heat started to diminish, when the heat subsides from the body, so where does heat gather? So the heat eventually has to gather at the heart. But where does it start? Where does heat start to diminish? So for those who engage in negativity all the time in their life, they lose heat from the upper part of the body first. So when you touch the person's head or forehead, you will see that even though the feet are still warm, but there's no heat on the forehead or from the head. So that means the person, the heat is already diminishing or gathering from the head. So this is indicative of person going to be born in lower realms. And then those people who spend most of their life engaging in virtuous actions, so those people, the heat, first they started to lose heat from their feet. So their feet get cold first. So that happens, it is indicative that it's a good thing the person may be there's a likelihood that person will be born in a better rebirth, upper realms. Sorry. So have you noticed any of this? Have you any experience being at the deathbed and notice? But normally what we do is we will try not to touch the body because we believe that consciousness is still residing. Consciousness has not left, even though the external breathing has stopped. Remember we discussed about this, the dissolution, stages of dissolution. Person is not dead yet. Clinically, the person is declared as dead. But from the Buddhist point of view, person is still in the process of dying. So only when the consciousness leaves, then we can say the person is dead. So that's why some meditators, they remain in meditative state for days. So because consciousness is still residing inside the body, so the person hardly loses the heat and the complexion, appearance. Everything looks as the person is still alive. The moment consciousness leaves, then the decay takes place. So that's why in Tibetan practice, when somebody dies, we try not to move the person. We try not to touch the person. But there are incidences or situations where you have no choice but to move the body, especially when a person dies in a hospital setting. You cannot say that, oh, I must leave the body here, for 3 days. We cannot say that. That's not allowed. So there you have to move to the mortuary, is it?
The morgue.
Mortuary.
Mm-hmm. So in this kind of situations, the advice is that you touch the crown. So you don't touch the crown with your bare hand. We normally use a statue, Buddha's statue, Buddha's image, or prayer text, or something you touch lightly on the crown. So the belief is that consciousness leaves from your crown. So this is also indicated, if the consciousness leaves from the crown of your head, then yeah, it is indicative of obtaining a better rebirth. So that's why the first thing, if you must touch the body, then use a Buddha statue or a prayer text and then touch lightly on the crown. So that is the practice. So now, how does one...
You mentioned 3 days. Is that kind of a standard?
The Tibetan practice is when somebody dies, they will approach an astrologer, and then they will ask them to do the astrology. And then there will be instructions what to do and what not to do. Normally, there's a lot of recommendations of prayers. And then they will also suggest when the body should be cremated, when the body should be moved out of the house. So normally it is like 2.5, 3, because even if a person is not in a meditative state, sometimes consciousness takes time. It will still linger in the body. Yeah. So we want to give that time kind of natural exit from the body rather than force exit. So now the question is, how does one reach the intermediate state? So when person dies, how does one reach the intermediate states? So of course we have the main two causes, karma and afflictions. Without that, you won't be able to take any rebirth. And we are under the control of karma and afflictions. Karma, we have plenty. We have taken countless lives in the past. So we have created all variety of karmas there, ready to be activated. But then it needs the affliction to activate that, to germinate that karma, to make it ready to produce. So that's in the 12 link. What is the number? The one that activates, one that nourishes the karma. What are the two? Remember in the 12 links?
Craving
and grasping. So these two activates that karma. And then, yeah, makes it ready to germinate. It's now, you know, the 10th one is called existence. So it is actually karma, but it is the karma that is activated, that is moistened, yeah, ready to produce. So main thing is the two causes. So with that, at the time of death, this craving and grasping, so mainly attachment to our body. Most of us, there's fear of losing our body. So because of that, there is attachment. First, you don't want to be separated from your body. You have this fear of annihilation. How do you say that?
Annihilation,
yeah. So you are afraid that you will lose. I will no longer exist. So that kind of fear, that engenders a strong attachment to our body. And that's the one that activates our karma. And then what happens is, with that, we directly goes. I mean, when the consciousness leaves, when consciousness is out of the body, we are already in the intermediate state. So, what kind of form do we take when we are in the intermediate state? So this depends on what you are going to become. So if you are going to be born as animal, let's say if you are going to be born as a dog, so you will have the similar form. You will have a form resembling dog. If you are going to be born as human being again, then your form will be like a human-like form.
I have a question about this affliction thing. Let's say somebody knows they're going to die, and they're having this fear, but they conquer it, and by the time of death, they don't have it. So is it just the fear of annihilation at the time of death that matters?
Mm. Yeah. No matter whatever situation you are in, there is always attachment to I, because we have this self-grasping. We have not eradicated this grasping of self. So there's always attachment to I. It may not be so at this grosser level where, you know, I will no longer exist, but there is what will happen to me, or there is some form of attachment. So that is the one that brings. Some in clear cases, there's anger and all this. Easy. But the attachment, it can be in different stages. Some can be very obvious, grosser level, but some can be very subtle. But there has to have an attachment. Mm. So based on the what kind of form we take, sometimes we see we hear people say that, oh, you know, when somebody passes away and you see that, oh, I have seen the person sitting in the house and all that. What do you think? Do you think there exists? There is something called ghosts?
I think there may be, but I don't think that's the Bardo.
Mm.
And then what's difficult for me to conceive of is an energy body which is perceivable, that looks like a physical body.
Mm-hmm. Why is not that the intimated? Why is not that person the intimated being?
How would that person or being connect with us in the living world? They don't have a body, they don't have a voice, they don't have any way to communicate with us. Gotten rid of their physical body, they don't have any connection with that anymore. They're not no longer tied to that. They may not mentally even be around anymore. They may have gone elsewhere.
Yeah, we don't know. Okay, let's see some of the characteristics of the Bardo being. He is already dead, yeah? He is in the Bardo state now. Nobody sees him.
Train!
No.
What are the similarities do you see in this movie? The characteristics. Not everything is, you know, fits. Everything fits in. But there are certain characteristics, what they talk about.
Physical, mm.
The qualities of the intermediate state, or more of a characteristics of intermediate state. It is seen by beings of the same type. So if you are Bardo being, and another Bardo being, the human who's going to be a human, so you can see each other. You can see another Bardo that is going to be, let's say human Bardo. They will see each other. But the other Bardo, they cannot see. We cannot see them. By beings with divine eyes, of course there are people who have these realizations. So they can see. In Tibet, there are stories where people can see, and there are stories where, oh, I just saw this guy pass by, and then, yeah, when you come home, the person has died. Yeah, there are people who have this kind of what is called divine eye. They will see dead people. And its faculties are complete. It has all the faculties, but unobstructed. You can travel anywhere, just a thought. If you think of going to, yeah, you, if now you're in here, but if you want to go to your home, you just have to think and you get there. So it's unobstructed. That's why you see in the, he can just jump into a train and nothing obstructs. Then this, it cannot be reversed. That's the question, remember last week it was raised. It cannot be reversed. I told you there are two views. So whether, let's say, if somebody is born in the Bardo to be as a human, let's say as an animal Bardo, so that person is going to be born as animal. So now that person is in the Bardo state. So can it be reversed? Can the person be reversed to be born better rebirth? So there are two versions. Bazubandhu says no, because these are projected or thrown by same karma. So you cannot change that. But then Asanga says, yes, you can. It can be changed. Even though you are born as an animal Bardo, but through others' prayers and power of prayer and all that, you can be born as a human Bardo. So that's why in Tibetan practice, we have this 49 days of prayers. We observe 49 days. And every seventh day, we do special prayers. That is to help the Bardo being. And so the question is, how long does a person remain in the Bardo state? So maximum 49 days. The lifespan of a Bardo being is only 7 days. So on the 7th day, the person dies. So why the person is stuck in the Bardo is the person could not find a birth. So that's why the person has to remain, no choice but to remain in that state until he or she finds a birth. So all the time looking for a place to be born. Because their lifespan is only 7 days, so they die on the 7th day. So that's why we do prayers on the 7th day. Because it is now trying to get a new rebirth. So if you do prayers on that 7th day, so it may influence it can influence the rebirth, hoping that they will get the actual rebirth. So that's why it will go on every 7 day, Bardo being will die until 49 day. And it says that maximum length of stay in Bardo state is only 49 days. So after 6 months, he said, oh, you know, I saw somebody, there's a ghost, all this thing. That may not be the case. That may be some other spirits taking form of your relatives or your family members. That cannot be that person according to the text, because person would have already achieved a new birth, new life, whether it's a lower rebirth or higher rebirth. Person would have already achieved, already obtained a new rebirth.
Well, it could be that person as a, I forget, the ghost state, you know.
So there's no such thing as ghost state.
Well, is there? Yeah, because, you know, as a Westerner, I try not to go there too much, but there is a, you know, what is it called? The hungry ghosts.
Oh, hungry ghosts is another life, yeah? Another
right.
rebirth.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So we say that it could be a hungry ghost in the form of something else coming back. Yeah, it could be another spirit coming back. Yeah, it could be. Yeah.
So, part 7 days is equal to 7 days that we experience.
They say that there is different. So, it's a human rebirth, human bardo, then that tallies with our duration of the day time, 24 hours, 1 hour, but other. Let's say the devas or the hungry ghosts, it would be different. So normally we say that their day is like our years. Yeah. So there's no way we know. So we have to base on hoping that, you know, the person will be achieving a human rebirth and the person is in human bardo. So that's why we do prayers. But definitely, even the person is in a, let's say, hungry ghost bardo, but the prayers, I'm sure, helps. So basically, the duration of the bardo being in the intermediate state is dependent on finding a right condition. So only when they find the right condition, then, yeah, they cease to be a part of being, and then they achieve proper or actual rebirth. So now question is, after being in the intermediate state, so now how do they achieve rebirth? First, we need to understand there are four types of birth. Birth from an egg, hens and chicken, all these birds. And then birth from a womb, that is us and mammals, I think. Birth from moist or heat, those bugs, is it? Can you give me an example? Birth from moist or heat.
I don't think that really is the case, because bugs come from larvae and eggs.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So what is the example? Is there anything that comes from moist and heat?
Not in the physical world, no.
Oh, is it? I must do research on this.
Yeah, maybe microscopic.
Bacillum and so forth.
Yeah,
things.
Bacteria and all that?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay. And then there's something called miraculous birth. That's why I put the image of Tsopema. Tsopema is the place where the legend has it that Padmasambhava sprang out of a lotus. That's called a miraculous birth. So we are focusing on the birth from a womb. So what happens is, when the time is ripe, when the conditions come together for the bardo being to be achieve the birth, what happens is they will have this dreamlike vision. In the vision, they will see the ovum, the father's sperm and mother's blood. They misperceive that as a father and mother lying together, engaging in sexual activity. So when they see that, they get attracted to it, and then they goes nearer and nearer.
Now I have a question I've had for quite a while. We now have tea to have
to, you know, test to visit
fertilization in different ways. What happens to that?
Yeah, as long as it's ovum. So ovum is the combination of mother's drop, mother's blood, and mother's egg. Egg and father's semen. So that is called ovum.
Right.
So you keep the ovum in a test tube or whatever it is, isn't it? So that is the material thing. And then the consciousness moves in. So what happens is, Bardo being, if the person is going to be born as a test tube baby, let's say, so the person will have this kind of dreamlike vision. That ovum that is held in a test tube, he will have this kind of a vision that they, you know, he will perceive that as a parents lying together. And then the person will approach, that Bardo being will approach nearer and nearer, get closer. When he sees, when he arrives close to that, whatever he has visioned there, and there is no longer parent there. Instead, they will see the genitals of the parents. And when they see, there's a lot of anger arises. And then that instant, Bardo being dies. And that's when the consciousness enters into the ovum. That's how one takes rebirth. How a Bardo being gets into the mother's womb. How the conception takes place. Because he thought that there's a mother and father there, so there's a attraction and desire. And then instead, yeah, he sees the private parts there. So there's a disillusionment, disappointment, yeah. And it is also said that if you, this is more like a Freudian view, if you are going to be born as male, then you will develop attraction to the mother. And then there's a kind of aversion towards the father. Likewise, not likewise, vice versa, is it? Yeah, if you are going to be born as female, there is attraction, you develop attraction towards the father. So that's how one takes rebirth. Interesting, isn't it? So this boy says, so what? We have discussed all that, you know. So what? What would you say to this boy? Yeah, I am opening to the floor. Very defiant. Yes, please.
Probably a lot of things we could say, but one thing comes to mind. The teaching that suggests that given this progression and that we can save, this is what it is and how it works, then the idea is to be prepared, to practice, to be ready for it, as opposed to being surprised.
Okay.
That seems to me to be the one obvious thing. Find yourself in the best conditions possible at a time of death, so that the rebirth process is most favorable.
Thank you. Anyone else want to try?
Yes, also in the Bardo, it would be very disconcerting. And so if you had an understanding of what was happening and you could recognize that was the state that you were in, it would be more calming. And that being the case, you have more of an ability to adapt to the condition and put yourself where you could have a more
Yeah, I wonder whether, you know, Bardo beings have any realization that they are in the Bardo state. I don't know.
Well, isn't there a Bardo yoga that you can, that advanced practitioners can learn? I mean, isn't it possible for someone who has practiced for a long time to recognize that?
Yeah, we talk about these stages, the dissolution stages. Of course, you're supposed to realize all this when they say, oh, now this is happening, now this is happening. Now this is the time I have to, you know, concentrate. But I don't know. I haven't seen anything maybe possible. So I'm just saying, yeah.
Well, it's important to live your life accumulating merit, doing good, because that is going to have a profound effect.
Yes.
And how kind it is for you to do that, because you really aren't going, you're doing it for the next being. You're not really doing it for yourself, in a sense, because you won't have the consciousness to know. You're really doing it for the new rebirth.
For you, isn't it? You're doing for you, for yourself.
Yeah, but then the rebirth isn't you, correct?
Rebirth is you, isn't it? I would say it's me, but in a different form.
Would I have my own consciousness in the next rebirth then?
Yeah, it's the same consciousness. Let's say yesterday's Cassie is still Cassie. Today's Cassie is still Cassie. Tomorrow's Cassie is still Cassie, isn't it?
So in my next rebirth, I would be the same.
Yeah, you won't be called Cassie, but you are you. But you are different body. Yeah, of course, it won't be the same quality, but it will be different body. Otherwise, we cannot say that we go through one life to another life, because this life is ends here. The person who is taking this life ends here, and then it's somebody else. And you cannot say that we take, you know, we go from one life to another life. And then we cannot talk about enlightenment, because we cannot talk about the process. We cannot talk about the incremental development, because one who is achieving that is not you, is somebody completely different. We have to say that. And that's not the case, isn't it?
You know, the teaching has clarified certain things, because a couple of times I've done prayers for people who died, and it was from, you know, from text, and it was encouraging them. But now that I understand the 7 day and so on, I've targeted more, and also that explains to me why the making the balls, the little balls with sampa and so forth, you know, because that sustains them, because that's what they eat, you know, so...
Or don't eat
them. So that's very helpful. Now I have a question that I most likely I will never, I don't say never, but not in this life probably. There's some advanced text that says, you know, for advanced practitioners, and I'm just curious because I'm not an advanced practitioner, and they would talk about you can refuse, when you can refuse the door of the womb. Okay, well, you refuse it, but then you're out your 49 days, and you have refused the human birth. Where do you go?
It depends on where you are going to be born. If you are going to be born as human being, of course, unless it is like Padmasambhava, you want to appear from the lotus. Other than that, you have to go through womb. We are talking about the birth from womb, so there is no other choice. But of course, if you are going to be born in this formless realm and all that, that's different.
So that's for them.
Yeah, that's for them. Yeah, yeah, they can do that. Yeah, but if you are going to be born as human being, then yeah. That's the way, yeah? That's the only way. Yeah, so you're all right, I think, yeah. So, first of all, it is good to know about this. In many traditions, it is a taboo to talk about death and dying. But that is really kind of ignorant. It's because, I don't want to talk about it. Then yeah, it happens that you don't know about it at all. And then, yeah, you are not prepared when the time comes. It is good that we learn about it, we study about it, and then, as you mentioned correctly, that then yeah, we know what to prepare. So we still have time. We are not on our deathbed yet. So we have time to prepare. And remember how the mind frame, mindset at the time of death is so important. And that actually is contingent. Whether you have a positive mind frame or negative mind frame is contingent on the way you live. So it is very important to live your life in a virtuous way. And basically, it's like practice. So practice, I think since we have time, I'll just briefly touch on this. Three trainings. Have you heard about three trainings? Three higher trainings. The training of ethical conduct, training of concentration, training of wisdom. Yeah, these three. So we only need these three. In Lamrim Chemo, it is condensed into three. Everything is included in this. There are three main reasons provided why three is adequate. The first reason is based on transforming our mind, based on taming our mind. So it's in order to tame our mind, we only need these three. How? So our mind is like wild elephant. It is always portrayed as a wild elephant. Wild elephant, if you don't restrain it, it can create a lot of problems. So what we normally do, we put a enclosure. Yeah, we made a fence. And then when you put in there, elephant has no way to get out and cause all that harm. So likewise, ethical conduct, when we practice or when we practice ethical conduct, especially these different vows, for monks and all this, you can take different vows. But for lay people, if you make commitments to practice the 10 virtues and refrain oneself from engaging in 10 non-virtuous actions, that is like creating that fence for the wild elephant. So your mind will be reduced. You will be able to reduce the detrimental harm that your mind can cause. So that's why all these ethical contacts are very important. This is like the, what you call the navigator. That is like the guideline for us. When you remain in that perimeter, then less likely to engage in negative actions. So that's why it is important. Remember I earlier emphasized that every morning it is good to make this motivation that today I will try my best not to engage in any of the 10 non-virtuous actions. So if the day passed by not doing all this, you receive the merit. Otherwise, even if you don't engage in this, you don't get the benefit because you haven't made the commitment and the pledge or the pledge in the morning. So it is very important always in the morning make this determination. Not only you will benefit, it will also help you to be a better person in that sense. So when you have this ethical conduct, you will be able to prevent quite a bit of negative actions. But that is not enough. We need to be mindful of our actions. We need concentrations. Even if we decided or committed to do this thing, most of the time we are forgetful. We don't remember. That's why we need to develop the training of concentration. Then we will be all the time mindful. Oh, I'm doing this, I'm doing this. Oh, I shouldn't be doing this, I shouldn't be doing this, I should be doing this. So you are all the time in what is now called in the present moment. You will know what you are doing. You are aware of what you are doing. Most of the times we are not aware of what we are doing. We are doing something else, but our mind is elsewhere. So that's the danger. Through this, we will be able to curb quite a degree of negative actions. But that is not enough. we are still unable to sever the root of our problems. That's when the wisdom comes in. When you have only the wisdom, realizing emptiness can sever the root of ignorance. Remember, we discussed that ignorance is the root. So only antidote is the wisdom. So that's how all these three trainings come into play in our practice. That's one. Another is the result. The result, the goal of our practice, can be summed up in two goals: temporary goals and long-term goals, or what is called the good rebirth, and then the final emancipation. So engaging in ethical conducts, like practicing the 10 virtues and refraining, avoiding engaging in 10 non-virtuous actions, can guarantee us from being born, guaranteed us from not being born in three lower realms. So it guarantees a better rebirth, human rebirth, deva rebirth, and then they are with demigod rebirth. So these three realms. So that is like achieving the short-term goal. But that is not our ultimate goal. Even if you are able to guarantee a good rebirth, but as long as we are under the influence of karma and affliction, we will cycle. Remember, we talk about these 12 links, how 12 links will repeatedly bring us to samsara. There is no end. Only end comes when you are able to sever that root. So that one, you need wisdom. But in order to have a powerful wisdom realizing that, you need to develop concentration. That's one way to look at it. Another is, in terms of birth, we have this desire realm, where through practicing the 10 virtues, you can achieve that birth in desire realm. But there are form realm and formless realm. Those you cannot achieve simply by practicing 10 virtues. On top of that, you need to practice certain degree of concentration, what is called the 4 absorptions and different degree of concentration. So that will bring you to the that will guarantee you to be born in the other 2 realms. But still, whether even if you are born in the formless realm, you are still in cyclic existence, still in samsara. So that's when you need the wisdom to really fully or complete, to achieve complete liberation. So that's why 3 training is important. So you already have all the tools. Buddha said that. What is the word? Ngegi kyola tarbe tapdengi taba rangla rale shebargis. Buddha said that I have already shown you the tools needed to get to enlightenment or to liberation. But is that it is dependent on you. I have shown all these paths, but if you don't practice, there's no way you will get there. So that's why that it is contingent on our own practice. If we practice diligently, repeatedly, consistently, then there will be a incremental progress, incremental development. That is better than nothing, isn't it? Something is better than nothing. So please, try your best. We all should try our best. So Happy New Year to all the Tibetans. It is our New Year this Tuesday. Losar Tashi Dele. Well done. Okay. That's all for today.
So we should say the dedication prayers. We'll say the short mandala offering on page 4, and then the concluding prayers.
Juje medo damare ra lenje nende gemba de sange shendo mede Dogun namda jen la chobara esho Rana menda la gana ya daya me Rimbo je mage banaman ke gyuro chi keba nyamba meba ya Kone gondo pe wara esho Udze rabden je namgara chile esho ju yeba dan Lozan tembe tume sasumu Duwe muze dadu ne gyuro je Korwe shenga pendan dewa malu jungwe ne Chere sewan tenzin yazo ye Chabe siddhe bado tenbar sho Chedara genpa tang kundu sambo tenyang deshin Teta kungin jesu talo je Gyawa deda thamje rabdo ngo Gyawa thamje ge ngowa kala shodo ngaba de Taye gewe tsawan dingun kyan sambo chuji rabdo ngobar ge